welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix for Wednesday, July 15th, 2015. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at KingdomStrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today on the Dad Show, I'm talking with Alan Fuller about his split vacation, really, the first part of which was the reunion for his Walt Disney World All-American College Orchestra. So, Alan, how did it feel, you know, returning to Walt Disney World to hook up with people that you hadn't seen, in some cases, in 30 years?
It was incredibly cool. I've kept in touch with a few of those people just over the phone before Facebook came around. And once Facebook came, it was a game changer for everybody to reconnect. But I hadn't seen anybody from the group face to face in, like you said, almost 30 years.
So the motivator for this trip was this reunion. Maybe talk just a little bit about how this thing kind of came about.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me tell you a little bit about the program for those of you who don't know, since it's kind of a bit of Disney history. The All-American College Orchestra program kind of ran in tandem with the All-American College Marching Band program that's been in Florida and California off and on. The orchestra program started in 1985 at Epcot, and this was a group of about 40, 45 musicians that we're going to perform on the America Garden stage outside the American Pavilion on the lake at Epcot. And Disney used to do an annual audition tour. And when I was in college getting my music degree, we'd see all of the audition posters on our bulletin board for everybody coming around. And I was in Bowling Green, Ohio at the time, and drove to Columbus, Ohio, and took this audition. And it actually took me a couple of times, different years auditioning for this to get in. And they were going, the Disney tour ran, I want to say, about a dozen cities all around the country. And I didn't really understand how cool it was going to be when I auditioned. I grew up near Cedar Point in Sandusky, Ohio, which is a shout out to Scott in Sandusky. And so I thought, you know, it's going to be, you know, kind of a little theme park, cheesy show. And it wasn't. It was, as it was when I got into the group in 1987, it was a group that we would play at the America Garden stage three shows a night, five nights a week. And so we were dark. Monday and Tuesday, we didn't have any shows. The other nights, we would go into Epcot in the afternoon and rehearse from, I think, about 1 till 3:30 was our entire work commitment. And they would give us vans. There were several designated drivers in the group, and we would drive into the park in the afternoon, have a rehearsal on Epcot territory in a building that was called Pico, named after one of the Epcot construction companies that actually built the park in 82.
Okay.
So this is a building that's directly behind the Mexican Pavilion.
Right, so like a backstage staging area.
Yeah, exactly. So we would drive in the cast member entrance to Epcot every afternoon, and we would just rehearse for a couple of hours. And so like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we would just do shows that night on the stage with the world dancers at the time. Back in the 80s, there was a ton of live performers in various venues around the kingdom and Epcot.
And World Showcase especially had, you know, quite a lot of live entertainment that was sort of, you know, to a greater or lesser extent, themed to the pavilions it was attached to.
Yeah, absolutely. And even there were a lot of musical groups even in World Showcase, believe it or not. They had the Future World Brass. It was a little kind of a mini drum and bugle corps that marched around and played like the band does in the Kingdom today. And the T-Bone Brass, they were kind of a safari-based group that marched around and did their thing. So there was a whole lot of music going down that day. The Kids in the Kingdom was another college program that played in front of the castle in the Kingdom at the time. And so at that point, the studios hadn't opened yet. You could actually see them building the water tower from Pico backstage. So we would go in and we'd do our rehearsals. And then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we would actually just play three shows a night. It was like 6 and 7:30 and 9 o'clock or something like that on the stage outside America Gardens. And then on Fridays, our afternoon rehearsal would consist of various celebrities coming in. Every week, we would have a different celebrity or group come in, and they would bring their big box of books with them that they, you know, a lot of them perform with symphonies around the country. And so they would drop in Friday afternoon, do a rehearsal with us, and then we would do their show Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And
so, were these essentially, you know, primarily singing groups, or are they, you know, just bands that perform, you know, do expanded arrangements of their music?
Well, it was kind of a mix. We did a weekend of shows with Mariachi Cobre, and they had some orchestral arrangements to accompany them. We did Voices of Liberty, but most of the others were kind of renowned acts at the time. We had Bob McGrath from Sesame Street, sure. And Maureen McGovern came in, and Johnny Green, who was about 900 years old at the time. He was one of the guys who wrote Body and Soul. And he came out and kind of hobbled over the piano and just knocked everybody out. He did a whole jazz set. And then actually Maureen McGovern came back and sang with him. She laid on the piano and sang Body and Soul. And it was really fun, really sexy. Rosemary Clooney did a weekend of shows. Donny Osmond, Richard Carpenter. And that was just, I guess, a year or two after Karen Carpenter had passed. And
sure.
It was cool having him there. And those are the biggies who stood out. Michael Krzyzewski, who was the director of the Florida Symphony at the time, came in and brought a whole bunch of classical stuff, and we did a whole classical set. But the musicians in the group were just astounding. I mean, the best musicians I've ever played with before or since. They were all from, you know, Eastman and Juilliard and New England Conservatory and North Texas State, and there I was from Little Bowling Green State University in Ohio. So it was a dream gig. Disney put us up in apartments in Orlando and gave us these vans with these drivers to drive us in every day and paid us really well. And so paid all our utilities. So the only thing we had to pay for was we had to kind of furnish our apartments, and they warned us ahead of time, and buy our own food and beverages.
How long did this program run for?
It was about 3 months. The last week in May, and I guess we clocked out the last week in August. So
this was basically a sort of a I don't know, apprenticeship almost, or a professional residency almost.
It really was. And the cool thing about it is the acts that would come in, the various guest artists, we would do our rehearsal on Friday, which was basically just sight reading, slamming through. There was really nothing to rehearse. Everybody was such good sight readers. And so we would do this, you know, we would do our rehearsal, and then we'd get through basically whatever their book was, and their shows were typically, you know, an hour long. And they would do what they would just call a workshop, and the artists would just sit there and talk about whatever it was that they had to talk about. And so they'd do a little presentation. A lot of times they do a Q&A and then sign autographs and stuff. And Bill Conti actually came in, who wrote the theme to Rocky and a whole bunch of other famous
movies. A lot of movie theme music.
Yeah, a whole lot. And then he did a really good, pretty much, you know, tell it like it is. Q&A with people asking about the business. And he kind of told a lot of stories about people that were in the business that were pretty famous that we all kind of chuckled over. But he was really cool and said, you know, anytime you're in LA after this, just, you know, call my office. And if I'm doing a recording session, mention how you know me, and I'll be sure that I've got folks get in. But it really led to a lot of stuff for a lot of people. being in that workshop, and it was a drag at the end of the summer to see everybody. And so many people from there went on to big stuff. Our bass player, actually, you know, we had hung out with Bob McGrath that weekend, and this guy went back to school in New York, and Bob got his name and number and called him, and he did pickup gigs with him in New York for a couple of years after that. And
very cool.
Yeah. And so the people, you know, we all kind of, you know, like I said, sort of kept in touch. The program ran off and on. It started in 85, and then it would, you know, they'd run it for a year or two, and then they decided it was too expensive or whatever, and they'd shut it down for a year or two. And it ran until 99. I think they probably, over the course of that time from 85 to 99, had about 10 or 12 years that the orchestra program actually ran, and I think 99 was the final year. So when they brought everybody back for the group, it was kind of a miracle, because it was just exactly the right size group with the right instrumentation. It wasn't like there were 30 trombone players showed up. It was exactly like if you had hired up an orchestra, the instrumentation was perfectly balanced. And there were a lot of like heavy duty pros. One gal who's on Broadway now, she sang some tunes with us. She's a violinist and sang some of the tunes in the concert. And, you know, a couple guys play with the Marine Band in Washington, which is a hotshot gig. And, you know, one guy he writes all the theme music for half the TV shows you see, and he's won a bunch of, you know, Emmys and things like that. So it was some real heavy hitters, and it was just a joy to play with them all.
Very cool. And so who really was behind getting this reunion together? Was this something that, you know, Disney reached out to you all, or that the group kind of pulled together themselves?
No, there's a Facebook group that's just for the musicians. There's one for the college program. There's one for the college music program, and then which is the orchestra and the band. And then the orchestra kind of started their own group, and people had been apparently saying, yeah, we want to do a reunion. And there was one of the guys, Doug Drosty, who is a violinist, who is the director of orchestras at Ball State University in Muncie, finally took it upon himself. And so he worked really closely with Disney Performing Arts, and It was kind of interesting, because Joe and I had decided last January we were going to go down, and it was the time of the Diz Dads convention and the races and everything in January this past year. And so we're DVC members, and so I want to say April or May, a year ago, we made our reservations for January. So that's all great, and we're all excited about doing that. About October, I get this Facebook blitz from the group saying, guess what, we're doing our reunion, and it's going to be in June. I was like, okay, guess we'll go again. And we bought annual passes instead of buying tickets for January. We ended up getting annual passes because we knew we were going to come back in June.
Okay, so this kind of a nice surprise. You already had a January trip, but this thing popped up and you were going to get to go back in June, so you got annual passes. So let's kind of get into the trip itself. The first part of your trip was the reunion piece here, and for the first time, you know, you were traveling solo.
Yeah, exactly. And we had had, we were all set to do this and looked at our schedule and said, okay, we're absolutely clear to go. Let's come down. And we're going to stay at Animal Kingdom Lodge. And we actually got in one of those standard view suites that, you know, is like 2.5 points a night on DVC. It's just ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, so, the value studios that are so hard to come by.
Right, exactly. So we actually, you know, on day 7 months, got our home resort, Saratoga. And so we got our reservation, and the Galvamator reservation was stunned. We got in. So we had all that lined up, and we had everything clear to go, no family commitments, nothing on our calendar. And then we actually had a family commitment come up about, a month or two before we were going to go. And we're like, okay. So we ended up having to kind of change our reservation, come early, and we just decided to stay later. So Joe had to stay here in town. And since we were going to stay longer, we ended up canceling our Animal Kingdom and just moved over to Saratoga. So I came Wednesday the 17th, because the group was going to start rehearsing on Friday. So I was like, well, I'm going to get some time in. There's such a long flight from Seattle. So I got in late on Wednesday the 17th. And then our group, the orchestra, rehearsed on the mornings of Friday the 19th and Saturday the 20th. And then we had our concert the night of the 20th. And then Joe actually flew the red eye in on the 20th and arrived on the 21st. So he wasn't here for the concert, but we decided to stay for 5 or 6 days after that.
Right. So you got to play together at least, you know, after the performance. So did you get to do any park touring with your old band buddies?
Yeah, actually. And they were, most of them hadn't been back to Disney since 87, which was really interesting. So from my year, from 87, my orchestra, there were 8 of us that were there. And so we had a little pack of 4 or 5 of us that kind of hung out for the first few days. And the group rehearsed in the concert hall at Saratoga Springs. And that
convenient was that for you?
Totally. So that actually kind of influenced, as soon as I got the itinerary for what the weekend was going to look like, I thought, okay, that's what we need to do. The concert was going to be at Downtown Disney on their stage. They couldn't get us onto the America Garden stage because they already had some stuff going on.
Right, which was, got that sounds like summer exactly. Series that's already in place.
Yep. So they said, yeah, you can perform at Downtown Disney, but we're going to have the Friday morning rehearsal and the Saturday morning rehearsal at the concert hall down at Saratoga. And I was like, well, okay. And so when I did the online check-in, I just requested as close to the carriage house and as close to the bus stop as possible. And we got probably the best location in the park for both of those. It was so easy. And it was great. And that's a really cool little hall. It's a very nice place to rehearse. Probably seats about 200. And it's just a cool little, I've never been in that building before. So it was nice to be in there.
Yeah. It's a neat space.
And I understand they do some kind of, high schools can come in, and I think they have different music competitions in there, and they do music clinics and whatnot. It's
Yeah, they do. They do some really neat programs with the high school kids, especially now. I don't know that they do as many with the college programs anymore, but the high school programs are really nice. They do, you know, marching band programs that, you know, they get to march with the with the afternoon parade, and they do orchestral programs that they use the Downtown Disney stage for. They do choral programs where they use one of the stages at Hollywood Studios. So there's a whole range of them.
Oh, right on. I've been backstage actually in California. I've gone down with performing groups twice to see how they do that in California and see what their backs, you know, where they do the, you know, Disney clinician kind of stuff. And it's pretty cool. So that's interesting. I didn't know how they handled that in Florida.
Yeah. It's very cool. They've got kind of little performance spaces all over the place.
Well, we had on Friday, Saturday, we had just morning rehearsals. And then Saturday evening was the concert. And Disney, for this particular event, they sent us lots of information months in advance, and they were doing a special housing rate at Coronado Springs for anybody in the orchestra, their family, friends, whoever was coming. So they had inexpensive rooms there, and then they gave everybody a 1-day hopper ticket to use while they were there, and then they were making tickets available obscenely cheaply. If you wanted to pick up extra days, while they were like $57 a day for a day.
Wow.
Yeah, for hopper tickets. So the day of the concert, we had rehearsal in the morning. And then that evening, we were going to perform at Downtown Disney, and Disney was militant about people not just showing up at the stage, no matter where you were staying. And some people were staying offsite; most were at Coronado. And so, for me, I had this ridiculous post that night about my itinerary, but staying at Saratoga, they didn't want you to just kind of ramble over there. And so I had to take the bus from Saratoga to Downtown Disney and over to Coronado, because Disney said you can all arrive on one bus that had to leave Coronado and go to the Disney Performing Arts Division and pick up our stage manager for the evening, drive not to Downtown Disney but to Saratoga, because with the construction, they weren't letting any groups go there. They would drop everybody off in Congress Park and everybody had to parade. So there's this funny video out there on our site of, you know, string bass players carrying their enormous bass and, you know, these giant heavy instruments, and this whole parade of about 50 people wearing these mouse ears and these things. So we had to walk all the way over there for the gig, and then walk all the way back over the bridge to Congress Park to catch our bus and drive back to Coronado.
A marching orchestra.
It kind of was. It really kind of was. But everybody was just elated. When we stopped at the Disney Performing Arts, they gave everybody these fun little ears with a patch on them that were performing arts. And so, everybody was just high as a kite. I thought it was just going to be me that was completely, you know, bowled over. But even in our first rehearsal, you know, we get out of there, and I got to meet a lot of friends, new people that I'd never gigged with that are just these accomplished musicians. And there's these big palooka guys saying, man, I had a hard time keeping a dry eye during that rehearsal. I couldn't read my music. And I was like, okay, good. I thought it was just me. So everybody was just overcome to be there again. And the concert went well. It was supposed to rain, and it had been sprinkling all day. And they kept saying, well, you know, we're going to do a call out whether or not we're going to, if we get rained out, we can't do the concert at all. And that's it. And we'll see. It's like, okay. But it was sprinkling pretty much all day, and we said, well, we're going to go anyway. And so we all went over there, and the audience all had umbrellas and ponchos, and it continued to sprinkle a little bit, but the thunder stopped, and we got a giant double rainbow just as the concert started.
Oh, beautiful.
It was really cool. And so the whole concert, there were a couple people there that filmed everything and put some videos out. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure we were in the Magic Kingdom at that point, because I remember snapping a picture of that rainbow over Space Mountain, from the People Mover.
Yeah. Well, we brought that, so you're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It was lovely.
Yeah. So it was kind of fun touring, you know, with people who hadn't seen the park in 20 some years, who had never seen the studios, who had never seen Animal Kingdom. So we did the concert that night, and then I think the orchestra had more or less taken over Coronado Springs. And so they gave us Rick's Lounge afterwards and after the concert. And so we had another little howdy do there. And then after that, some people hung out for a day or so. I had a couple friends. Joe had flown in Sunday morning, and so that day we went to Animal Kingdom with a couple of my friends who had never ever been to Animal Kingdom, so that was kind of fun. And you know, there's new stuff every time I turn around Animal Kingdom.
Sure, yeah, that's in it's in sort of its development mode, right? I mean, it's like a half step ahead of, or maybe even a full step ahead of, you know, where Hollywood Studios is now. You know, there's still construction walls and things up all around, but we're starting to see progress.
Yeah, and we got to eat poop while we were there. That was exciting.
Oh, and that, you know, limited time only, because that's already disappeared.
I know. I can proudly say I ate poop. And we also ate at the Harambe Market, at some of those new places there in that kind of little food court they've got going on there. That was cool. We
didn't do that. Wait. Tell me a little bit more about that, because it's come up a couple of times, and you're the first person who said, not only did we see it and it looked cool, but we actually, you know, had a chance to try some of the food. So what did you think of Harambe Market?
It was good. I had kind of a flatbread type thing. I was thinking it was going to be the standard Disney flatbread rollout, you know, with the, you know, sort of pizza on a flatbread kind of thing. And it wasn't. It was really kind of like two flatbreads folded up with some kind of grilled beef and vegetables on the inside. It was kind of like a cucumber tzatziki sauce.
Okay.
And it was pretty tasty. Joe, what did you have? Animal Kingdom. Do you remember what you had for lunch? Joe says no. But anyway, yeah, it was, you know, it's nice kind of having the food court thing that, you know, they had, you know, sausages and things like that. The seating was way too limited there. And so we ended up ducking around the corner and eating kind of down the street in Harambe. We found a nice little patio there that the four of us could eat. It was in the shade. One thing that I kind of noticed, though, is when I'm setting on my reservations, and I know that you are the same way, Aaron. I had, in fact, I saw a post of yours that I had my touring plan alerts on. I'm like, oh, that's great. This day's going to be a 5. This is going to be a 6. Whoa, it's a 9.
Yeah. It's like we were there at the same time. There were a whole group of us who were around. And it's kind of funny because, you know, I think that there was a total of as many as 6 or 7 DizDads guys who were in the parks, you know, similar times, and we sort of like all were just missing each other all over the place.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and you know, and so we had, you know, our itinerary, we had our orchestra friends too that we were hanging out with, to, you know, that I haven't seen in 30 years. So that was, you know, connecting with those. But, you know, looking at the numbers, I was, you know, it's always sort of off-putting. You're like, oh, do I even want to go? It's going to be a nine. And I thought at least the first couple of days, I know you guys were off on a cruise, the first couple of days, I think that they way overestimated. And dates that I had as nines and eights and stuff were like sixes, I thought. It really wasn't as bad as they said. Later in the week, it got worse.
It was a little bit of a mix. I think that the crowd levels were probably accurate, but I think that some of the wait times maybe were suppressed because for those first few days, it was so hot. Mm-hmm. You know, and David and I just talked about this on last week's show, but, you know, the temperatures were record highs for Orlando, and the normal afternoon rainstorms until your performance day, really.
Yeah.
The expected afternoon rainstorm, which is what usually helps to kind of moderate the temperature a little bit, didn't come.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
And so I think a big piece of it was that, you know, the crowds legitimately were eights and nines, but people were giving up.
I think because of the heat. Yeah. And we just saw, and I was talking to one of the cast members. I don't even remember who it was. Maybe it was a boat pilot who said something about, oh, yeah, here we go. It's about 2:30. And this is about the time people start wilting. And he's like, we'll have lots and lots of first aid calls from people just passing out, just dropping like flies until about 5 o'clock tonight.
Well, yeah, because that's, you know, that's the other thing David and I were talking about last week is that, and it might have been a little different, you know, since you were touring around with groups of adults for the most part. But we noticed that because those rains weren't coming through and so the humidity levels were so, so high and stayed so high that, it was really, you know, almost dangerous because you had to think about the fact that you needed to drink. Because the humidity made it so you didn't think about being thirsty. You didn't feel thirsty despite being totally dehydrated.
Right. And there, anybody who knows me very well knows I've always got a bottle of water or a glass of water in my hand everywhere I go. It's kind of a joke in our house. And so I was constantly doing that and hydrating, and I would still feel a little bit woozy about supper time from the humidity, even as much as I was taking in.
Yeah, so just, you know, I'm saying it again because, you know, it's going to be that summer. And, you know, we got lots of people still traveling in July and August. And, you know, stay hydrated, please.
Yeah. Yeah. One interesting thing, though, that we noticed is we have a buddy who's a bartender at Top of the World that I went to high school and college with. And so we ended up at Top of the World later in the week. And we were kind of talking, saying, you know, when we finally got around to having those afternoon rain showers, and it would just, you know, the parks kind of cleared out in the afternoon without the rain. You may have noticed, you know, about one or two, and they just wipe out until five or six. And I think just because of the heat and the humidity. But when Joe arrived and we were, you know, the afternoon showers would come and we're kind of, you know, rubbing our hands waiting for the crowds to leave, and they didn't when it was raining. And so we were talking to our buddy, the bartender, and he said, this time of the year, you know, it's typically not all the DVC people that have, you know, they're there for 9 or 10 days and they're just, you know, thinking, oh, I'm here all this time, I'm just going to leave and go back to my room. It's people that have really, you know, saved and scrimped and, you know, really put in for their family vacations, their shorter vacations, their 4 or 5 days. And they're like, you know, I'll be dipped if I'm going to leave this park. We're staying.
Right. And those are the folks, this is their once in a lifetime trip or their once in 5 years trip. And it's, you know, it's costing me $90 to be in this park today. Yep. So I'm not leaving until I get my $90 worth.
Yep. God bless them. That's why we spent 45 minutes in line for the Haunted Mansion. Oh, but anyway, I was going to mention one of the things about being there before Joe is I brought his magic band with me because we have annual passes. And so I had figured out right before I showed up, and I had posted something on the Diz Dad's Facebook page saying, is this going to work if I try this? Because we have annual passes. I brought Joe's band. He obviously wasn't using it while he was in Olympia. And so I set up all of my fast passes for the parks where I was going to be those days. And then I rescheduled his band for three different fast passes. So the days before he's arrived, I had six fast passes going in every park. And it was awesome. I just had to remember which fast passes were on which band. And then I wore one.
You should warn people. Here's the deal. This only works with magic bands that are connected to an annual pass holder.
Right.
And the deal is that you know, when you're an annual pass holder, essentially your band is always live. If you're using a regular ticket to access the parks, then your magic band and its access to the FastPass Plus system, you know, is only live if that magic band is scanned on entry into the park. So it doesn't really work. Like, if you're a family of four and, you know, you take all the family's bands and, you know, you go into the park by yourself, it won't work. You won't be able to use the rest of the family members' bands. But in the case of annual pass holders, because those bands are always active, you can kind of double dip.
Yep. It was slick. But this was a trip of firsts for us a bit. Before Joe showed up, I was kicking around downtown Disney one afternoon with my orchestra cronies prior to the concert, and went to the Boathouse, had lunch at the Boathouse, which I thought was really pretty tasty. A $20 hamburger, but by golly, it was the best hamburger I've ever had in my life.
Well, see, and so this is the what I like hearing, you know, because we heard all the outrage when the menu came out, right? And people were freaking out at the, you know, $21 asparagus that turned out to be a misprint. It was $12 asparagus, which is pricey but not ridiculous for, you know, family style steakhouse sides. So you had the burger. It was expensive, but sounds like worth it.
And the place was beautiful. I walked in, you know, and it didn't have a reservation. We were kind of shopping in the afternoon at Downtown Disney and just walked in to the big main bar and pulled up a seat at the bar and took the menu and had a $20 hamburger. And it was really tasty, you know, gorgeous view. One of my buddies is an Amphicar pilot there.
Oh, wow.
And he said the Amphicars are making lots of money.
Wow, so people are ponying up the $120 for the 20-minute ride.
They are. They're the most successful part of the enterprise right now.
Wow. Yep. That's pretty amazing because, you know, we were speculating about, you know, whether they were going to have to lower the prices or the cars were going to start disappearing.
No, and I would see, you know, we walked around various times at Downtown Disney, and there were always at least three or four pilots there, and they weren't just standing around waiting for people. They were busy. There were cars out in the lake the whole time.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess not so great for those of us who were hoping that they would start running some discounts. And
I think they're supporting the Boathouse right now.
Wow.
The Amphicars, as long as the demand is there. And we went to Trader Sam's a couple of times. One night with my buddy, who's the Amphicar pilot, and his girlfriend, who, as of right now, continues to work at Disney Quest for the next year.
Yeah.
And that was really, really cool. So we decided Trader Sam's is kind of our new hangout.
So talk to me about Trader Sam's. You know, has the wait moderated any, or were you just willing to get in line and wait your turn?
Well, we didn't really have a problem with the wait. The first night, Joe arrived on a Monday, early morning. And so we made arrangements to meet our friends Monday evening after they got off work at Disney. And so we had been tooling around Epcot that day. And so we ended up just heading over to Trader Sam's, and I think we were going to meet them at maybe 7 o'clock. And we just walked in, and Trader Sam's opens at 4 every day. And so we didn't know anything about the wait. It's very unmarked. And it only seats, I want to say, 45 or 48 people. And so we headed in there. There's no prices in the menu, so just be aware. Those of you who haven't been there, especially if you're planning to buy the cool glass, if you have a cocktail that goes with the cool glass, you might want to ask if they say, oh, would you like the glass with that, commemorative glass with that? Find out how much it is. The Nautilus, I think, is $52 or something like that.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. The Nautilus, I think, is the most expensive. And and if I remember right, with the glass, it's $52. Without the glass, it's still not cheap, but I think it's like $36.
Right. Yeah. And it's a big cocktail. We ended up going there twice. And we got the shrunken head. I got that one time, and Joe got the one with the volcano on it. And then I got the rum flight. And the three little glasses are really cool, but I think that it was $31 for the rum flight plus the three little Trader Sam's glasses. But
now you know how I love a flight, so tell me about the rum flight. You know, was it? I mean, did you get some nice variety out of it, and was it good stuff?
Yeah, there was a nice variety. I don't remember specifically. I didn't bring the menu card with me, but there was only.
Well, of course not, because you had, you know, enough drinks. Yeah, you had a Nautilus and a shrunken head and a rum flight. So yeah. I'm surprised you remembered your name. But
I'm glad I remember my shoes. But there were you know, one was, you know, kind of straightforward, regular, you know, rum like you would expect, and the other two had a little bit more, you know, like honey and different fruit notes and, you know, spices and stuff like that. So they were pretty tasty. We actually got food there as well, and the food was pretty good. There are, for those of you who haven't been to Trader Sam's, there are a lot of fun events that go on there, and they open at 4. The second time we decided to go, we showed up about 3:30 because we had heard a line forms, and we're like, oh, there's only a couple of people hanging out here. And finally a cast member came through the hall and said, oh, you're waiting to get into Trader Sam? Yeah. Oh, the line starts outdoors. So we looked outside, and there's just this random line on the patio that doesn't really go anywhere. So we got in line behind those people, and then they counted us. And there is outdoor seating for Trader Sam's, but it was, you know, 98 degrees while we were there. Everybody, and all the fun goes on inside.
Well, yeah, and that's the downside. I mean, you know, they were saying that this will be better than, you know, the Disneyland situation because there's more outdoor seating and all this other stuff. And I just don't see the outdoor seating as being that helpful, because if I'm going to Trader Sam's and I have to wait, my wait isn't going to be over if I'm sitting on the patio, because that's not what I came for.
Right. If you're just there for the drinks, go upstairs. Just, you know, right. Go to the lunch and get some drinks. Although I did hear that there's one drink that they only serve on the patio. It's not in the menu, yada, yada. But the inside was really fun. It was sort of like our trip to Aulani. It was a little disconcerting for people to bring their, like, little kids into the bar, like bassinet, a little. And, you know, there's all kinds of fun, you know, kooky hijinks ensue. And as I understand it, at 10 o'clock, they kick out all the little kids, and it gets a little more R-rated from the staff and the little more ribald language kind of thing.
Now, my understanding was that they were supposed to become either 18 and up or 21 and up starting at, like, 6 p.m., like, fairly early. But you're saying that doesn't look like they were actually enforcing that until later?
Yeah, I think they were saying 10 o'clock. They were going to let little kids stay until 10, and that's when they'd kick everybody out.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the first time we were there, I want to say it was maybe 7 or 7:30 we went. And then the second time we went, it was just me and Joe, and we got there early and lined up, and they counted everybody in. It was more fun the later you go. I would definitely say that. You know, a lot of people with little kids just hoping to see some goofy kind of show. And, you know, that early in the day, the staff wasn't quite as inspired as they were a little bit later on.
Okay. I can understand. It takes a little while to warm up.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, you know, we talked for a good chunk of time here, and we haven't talked much about parks. So I just want to do a quick review with you of you know, other things from this trip that maybe, you know, were highlights. I'm glad we're getting a little different perspective, because this was a different kind of trip, and so we're getting some great information and tips. You know, you talked a little bit about Animal Kingdom, so let's talk a little bit about some of the other parks. What were some things about your experiences at Epcot on this trip that, you know, were memorable, that stood out, impressions from Epcot?
Oh, one of the things that we actually got to do with the orchestra the night before our concert. On Friday night, we'd rehearse that morning, and then that night, I completely forgot to mention, we did the Illuminations dessert reception.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, for the orchestra and their families, and it was kind of a rainy night, and so we were supposed to be on the Italian, the little plaza out there by the gondola docks, and so because of the weather, they moved it to that pavilion that's between UK and Canada. It's unmarked. It's back by the phone booths. And if you go through that, they use it during Food and Wine. So they had everybody in there, and it was a really nice reception. And they did a little speechifying and stuff. And then before Illuminations was supposed to start, they herded everybody out with a flashlight, and we were going to be on a nice level there by the UK. And they delayed the show about a half hour, gave everybody raincoats and stuff, and they still went on, even though it was raining. So that was really cool. And then later in the week when Joe was there, we actually did a little fun Fast Pass Plus mumbo jumbo that one of the cast members showed us after we had blown through all of our Fast Passes, and we really wanted to get Illuminations just to see what that seating was like standing, I guess. And so one of the cast members said, okay, get like the latest FastPass Plus event you can, probably something that's not hugely in demand. So we took like the very last seating of Turtle Talk with Crush.
Okay.
For the FastPass kiosk. And she's like, and check back for Illuminations. And within about 10 minutes, I looked and it was available. So she said, get your latest thing. Don't get something that's like at 7 o'clock and then hope to switch it out.
So I see. So basically, what the hint that she was giving you is that they do sort of an assessment, maybe an hour or so before Illuminations, if that. And if there's more space available, or if people who had those fast passes earlier in the day wilted and gave up and left the park, then they make some more slots open. And so if you've got a fast pass pending, you can change it.
Exactly. And that's what we did. And it was terrific viewing. It was really terrific. And it's on the Future World side, so it's pretty easy to make a mad dash for the bus if you know the best way to get out. So that was really cool. We're glad that we saw that. I got to see
that's
that.
That's a great tip.
Yeah. But other than that, Epcot wasn't hugely different for us. Mama Melrose, we had lunch at Mama Melrose at Hollywood Studios. That was, we're, of course, getting into the half-day park discussion like everybody else. But it was cruddy weather that day when we went to Hollywood Studios. We ended up taking the boat over to Epcot for dinner. It's just kind of our default destination for eating. Epcot's our favorite park. So a lot of times we will just try to get into Boardwalk so that we can get into there in the studios on foot. But we kind of fell back in love with Saratoga on this trip.
Well, that's good. Always nice to make sure that you enjoy your home resort.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially one with low points like Saratoga.
Right. So the only park we haven't really talked much about is Magic Kingdom. Anything stand out about Magic Kingdom? What did you think of the hub redesign?
Loved it. Really roomy, really easy to cut around and cut through. We didn't see Wishes on this trip. I think we kind of did from the back corner, but we were sort of racing around. We didn't see Wishes from the hub this trip, but I understand it's a very nice. We saw where the new viewing area is for Wishes, and that looks like that would be ideal too. Ate at Tortuga Tavern this time, which I'm a sucker for Mexican food. I'll eat Mexican food every day, and I was really kind of delighted at how they've just changed up the menu. There's only basically three entrees that you can get, and it's there's no molten cheese. Well, there's no molten cheese anymore.
Right, that's kind of gone away all over.
Yeah, that nuclear cheese is gone. So this felt a little more fresh and healthy, a little more Chipotle grill, Qdoba kind of thing, and it was good. I was glad to see it.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that my wife made a point of noticing was that one of the things about being in the Magic Kingdom on days when the crowd levels are projected to be eights and nines is that things like Tortuga Tavern are open, and even the Tomorrowland Terrace was open.
Yeah, absolutely. And so and not only were they open, but I was sitting there eating lunch at Tortuga Tavern. Lots of people would come up and get the menu card and look at it, and they're like, oh, there's no molten cheese or no nachos, so bye-bye.
So they missed out on the better quality food.
They totally did, and I had a lot of leg room. But and it was very weird. We always go to Pecos Bill, not just for the food, but it's, it's super handy and it's giant if you're back in that area of the park. But, we missed the taco salads once they got rid of, the refried beans and things, but it just was weird without even the cheese this time, and so I don't know. we'll head back. That was a little sad because it had just started that weekend when we were there. Everybody's posting, there's no more nuclear cheese here.
Yeah. All right. All right. So I guess this is the time where we go back and we say, you know, big impressions. What would you say were the, you know, maybe two or three sort of highlight moments of this trip that when you look back, you know, these are the things that are going to come to mind?
You know, I think it was really seeing the new stuff at Animal Kingdom, and that was really cool. And showing it with our friends was cool. It's almost, you know, Christmas morning with kids, showing people who have never been to the park, taking them there. Sure. And I think really seeing Illuminations two different times from two different standpoints, and we've seen it many, many times, but I really have to say the viewing area just makes it.
It does make a difference. We saw Illuminations for the first time from a table at Rose and Crown on this trip. We hadn't planned it that way. It just ended up that way. And
nice.
It was really cool. It was great.
Oh, yeah.
A great view. It was kind of easier because, you know, my son sometimes, you know, there are parts of the show he'll get bored or, you know, the fire barges will freak him out or whatever. And because we were in the restaurant, you know, there was, he could pay attention to other things if he needed to. And
it
was a great view.
And you're sitting and there's nobody like, you know, right in front of you that rushes up the last minute.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I could have a scotch flight while I enjoyed the show.
Yeah, sweet.
So. All right. So Illuminations views and hanging with the folks at Animal Kingdom and introducing some people to it. Any you know, tips you would give to people that maybe you think this is something you learned? I mean, we've covered a couple of these things, but, you know, something that you think from this trip you learned that was unique and that maybe somebody else looking at a similar situation might want to know.
I think I would recommend that folks at least try to check out Trader Sam's if you get a chance. It's nice to get out of the park and do something. This was the week that the monorail got struck by lightning and everything was shut down for a day or two in transportation. We ended up at Trader Sam's anyway, and it was really pretty cool. Like I said, they don't seat that many people, but I would try not to get there at opening. You know, try later and be prepared to, you know, just sit on a bar stool. Even if you got a group, they've got bar stools there that are fun. And then I would say check out the boathouse. Boathouse was actually really pretty cool. And from what I hear, there's no trouble getting seating. And they've got that bar that's kind of out on the pier that's actually on the lake. And that was very nice too out there.
Yeah, those all sound like some great suggestions, and I appreciate that we're getting a different perspective, a different kind of trip. So thanks so much for coming back and talking to us about it. When's the next one? You going to be at Diz Dad's in January again?
I don't think so. We had some friends that we haven't seen. Actually, my old roommate, who was in the marching band when we were at Disney in '87, he and his girlfriend live in the Boston area, and they're like, "Oh, we're going down in December," and so we were just planning on it. But I think actually Joe's got a conference in Baltimore in the fall, so we're going to go see them then. But we are, I think we're going to go see the Disneyland celebration before it ends. The 60th,
okay,
the Diamond.
Yeah. 60th anniversary. It's a big one.
Yep, it is.
All right. Well, enjoy. We'll be looking forward to hearing your impressions of the 60th anniversary stuff.
Sure.
There's some great new fireworks and parade going on there. So I'm excited to hear some impressions.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thanks again, Alan.
You bet. Thank you.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation. Right at the start of everything that's new, one little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dream Finder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas. Anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two times tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal.